Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions in the law. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. On this show, I interview lawyers ditching the billable hour and experts who can help attorneys move beyond billing time. Thanks to my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, links to both in the show notes, more on them later, and use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up. You get 10% off, and it supports the show. The best way to support the show is to share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. Thrilled to have with me here today on the Law Subscribed podcast, Gabriel Stieritz of Lexamica. Gabriel, go ahead, introduce yourself to my listeners.
Hi, Matthew. Good afternoon. My name is Gabriel. I'm the founder of Lexamica. We're a legal referral platform aimed at plaintiffs' lawyers.
And when you say plaintiff's lawyers, you mean like a plaintiff's personal injury lawyer primarily, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the way that I would drill down into that is our target customers are largely auto injury law firms. And so we help them and adjacent practice areas. So very much like is maybe not a surprise to you, but employment law is one of our big ones, right? So there's like injury and then employment is a big one. And so, yeah, that's where we're helping out. We don't really do mass torts, though, which is the question that everybody asks when they hear plaintiff's law.
Well, let me give my listeners just a little background on how I discovered you. And that is, as a legal content creator myself, I follow some other legal content creators to see what they're doing. And of course, one of the most famous ones is Legal Eagle on YouTube. And so he's got... I know there's like a team, a whole team behind it, but like a year ago or something, or maybe not even that long ago, they started to do the Eagle Team, which was, where people could put in like their cases to the Eagle Team. And I was like, well, that's a really interesting thing. I'm going to check that out. And as it turns out, like there was a part of Eagle Team where lawyers could sign up as referral partners. And I just signed up thinking I was joining. I was like, you know, not really joining in like a legal sense joining. That I was signing up to be on this legal team, and Lexamica is the software that was powering that, but that's not all you do, right? So how about you tell us just the story about how you came to partner with Eagle Team, and also that's not like just what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many interesting components here to the story, and my personal background is I way back when went to art school. Spent a long time in nonprofit management and fundraising, just great experience in terms of being able to understand why mission is important, selling, building culture, and then moved into legal space. And my entree into that was through a plaintiff's wage firm. So we were helping clients all over the country get back wages that they were owed by their employers. And as a part of that, we were building relationships with large auto injury firms across the country. And so that was kind of like the early days with this internal business practice of taking referrals from other law firms, which eventually spun out into, well, all law firms are doing referrals all the time. This is huge. And there's really no good way of doing this. And there's no platform. There's no continuity. There's no transparency to it. Like it just doesn't have any kind of a good solution. And so we started working on a platform kind of in the background for this. And man, I honestly don't remember how we ended up running into Devin, who's Legal Eagle, but we got to know him and some of the other creators in the space and realized these things actually work really well. And to get to kind of what I think is the heart of why legal creators and referrals are so well suited for each other is that in the age of social media, as you know, with podcasts, if you're online, you're inherently national. Like from day one, there's no such thing as, oh, well, I'm a big YouTuber in the state of Arkansas. Like that's just impossible. That's not how it works, right? And so anyone who's like got a social media presence, you are across the country, if not the globe. And so when we started meeting these creators, we're like, oh, wow, the fact that we have started this national membership of law firms is very well suited to these people who have national audiences because you've got lawyers who've done demand side aggregation, pulled together lawyers all over the country who are looking for cases. And all of a sudden, that's like this hand-in-glove match for people who have an audience that's all over the country. And so those things started to really work well together in addition to kind of the other work that we were doing. So I know, man, I just skimmed over a whole bunch of stuff there. I'm happy to like drill down into any of that because you asked me to synthesize a bunch of different threads that really took like 24 months to come together.
Yeah, yeah. I guess then a question that will let you do that, I hope, is like, why legal tech? Like, why even pursue this at all? I mean, you kind of touched on it. Just, I guess, to give a little bit more context, you touched on it with the whole, like, there's no good way to do referrals, even though it's been done, you know, it's done between law firms forever informally. You'd think the American Bar Association and bar associations would do a much better job at this, but they're just awful at it. And so you saw the market need. So I guess we got that part, but then really like drill down into why legal tech as a solution.
I think that's more of a personal question than anything. I'm really drawn to technological solutions. So even internal to when I was in nonprofit management and then managing an individual law firm, my bent was always toward how do we make this more efficient? How do we take to the things that only people can do and give those to people, and the things that technology can do and give those to technology? And one of the early things that I saw in the legal space in plaintiff's law was just this overabundance of manual data entry, of duplication, of these workflows that were like completely rote, mind numbing. And at the same time, like computers would be really, really good at them. So like even like early days when we were just doing lead generation from Nolo or Montdale Hubble or what have you, it's just like emails that dump into an email inbox. Well, those can be parsed, right, by a simple email parser and then put into an intake system. And then you can click to call, and then you can email drip out to them, right? So it's like all of those efficiencies, we realized those inside of the law firm, and then kind of ran out of runway on the internal efficiencies and started to look at, well, how do we create external inter-law firm efficiencies as well? And referrals was right at the top of the list. And so it's just an exciting space too, because it's happening all the time. The stakes could not be higher because it's at least two law firms plus a client who all need to be kept in the loop on this thing. The client's got a real legal need that needs help. One of the things that I think about all the time is that 76% of Americans who need legal help don't get it. That's one of my North Stars in terms of the metrics that we're looking to effectively change, which means that anytime someone reaches out to a law firm and says, hey, can you help me with this issue? That's a big deal, because 3 in 4 people ultimately don't convert. And there's obviously a lot of reasons why that happens. And some of those people will just get, you know, their issue solved in general. But to me, the fact that a person who is brave enough to call a lawyer has done that, let's be really, really careful with that and try to help that person, connect them with the right service at the right time in the right way, rather than the de facto response. And, you know, I literally heard this on someone's outgoing message 2 days ago. We're so busy with cases that we're not taking any new clients right now. There is no voicemail box associated with this. Goodbye. Well, I picked up the phone to call you. You could at least like tell me where the bar association is, to not basically hang up the phone on me without even picking up. So yeah, it's a bunch of things altogether. And then the technology aspect, it's like, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel, but you've seen these platforms that connect people with services work really well over the past couple decades: Uber, Lyft, Airbnb, eBay, Amazon. It's like someone's going to do this in the legal space, and there's so much pent-up demand for legal services. How do we start moving in the space? And referrals seem like a great way, because there's a big pain point for law firms that are doing them.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, so obviously longtime listeners know that there's clearly mission alignment with what you're, you know, trying to do, and what this podcast is trying to do by inspiring attorneys to use the subscription model, because it lends itself well to using technology to create efficiencies. So you could affordably and profitably serve the latent legal market and help close that access to justice gap, right? But I can't not pull that thread that you just laid out, which was that, you know, maybe the, you know, you're starting with referrals, but maybe the product roadmap is like become the Uber for lawyers. Is that sort of the goal ultimately?
Yeah, I mean, the goal is not necessarily to be a B2C endpoint, but every lawyer is an entry point for the community to start to engage with the potential solution to their legal issue. And what I mean by that is Legal Eagle with his channel, right? He's built trust with these people who consume his content. You've built trust with the people that consume your podcast, with the people that you know. Auto firms, their billboards are everywhere. They have this trust just by kind of brute force with the community. And they would tell you that, like, if the billboards went away, they'd stop getting calls. But they have that trust. And so we aren't trying to be the entry point like Nolo or Avvo or Martindale Hubbell or lawyers.com, but because there is so much latent trust that's not being realized into legal services, that's where we're starting. And that's where we see there's a lot of work to be done here.
Yeah, and it's a really great point that you raise. And one of the reasons why like this podcast is targeted at lawyers is because, I could whip up a podcast, but I'm only licensed in Illinois, for my law firm, as a lead generation tool. I'm actually giving a presentation on podcasting for lawyers at ABA Tech Show. That will have been months ago at the time that this episode probably goes live. But anyway, that's, that is a problem. Yeah. But it sounds like your solution, your technology is a solution, to that problem. So at least lawyers can capitalize somewhat on any leads that they get outside of their licensed jurisdiction. But here's a question for you, though, about that, because it might be 10, 20 years from now. But I think eventually, so by then probably you'd adapt because you'll see it coming. But I think eventually this arbitrary state-by-state licensure is probably going to go away. So with that in mind, are you thinking about how you're building the tool to still make referrals? Because at the end, I'm a true solo and I only know what I know and I do what I do. And for me, it's broad, but inches deep, not miles deep. A lot of lawyers found I could be really profitable if I just focus in on one practice area. But then all the lawyers did that. So the general practitioner actually it's a blue ocean now. So I'm taking that approach. But I think eventually, though, they're going to get rid of this kind of arbitrary restriction on licensure. And there's been some proposals around how to do that, just properly disclose it to the client. So even with that in mind, are you worried about that kind of a re-regulation?
First of all, that's fascinating. And I mean, I have not heard that conversational thread at all. And I'm going to be doing a lot of thinking about that because in my space, all the conversation is around deregulation and ABS. And I like what you said, which is re-regulation, right? But from my perspective, I think that the re-regulation and deregulation, to me, that's absolutely an opportunity, right? Because really what we are interested in is the separation of the origination, the marketing, and the litigation or the handling of cases. So it's not about geography. Outside of state licensure is always something that, I think will be to some degree will matter, right? Because even if you could practice in 50 states, Matthew, you probably don't want to take an auto case on in Florida, right? There's a lot of reasons why you still wouldn't want to do that. And so our goal is really just to be positioned so that as certain lawyers realize, well, I'm really good at the marketing side of this and acquisition, then they don't have to have a back office. And the lawyers that are good at litigation, of which there are obvious, that's kind of the classic lawyer thing is that side, they can plug in and they don't have to worry about being the face of this at all. And so obviously so some of that is in the big traditional markets where you're seeing law firms that have built some systems around this with the referral managers and they go to conferences and build, kind of a shabby referral platform, but then way more sophisticated in the creator space. And I'm just that's what's really interesting to me. So I think re-regulation, deregulation, all of that creates additional opportunities. And I think that if anything, the potential roll-up of law firms, if the ABS model takes off in more states and you start to see more hedge fund money coming in, could potentially do some things. But at the end of the day, even with realtors, you have this doctors, you have referrals in other industries and that are much less regulated than law.
And I mean, I know lawyers who are getting a lot of business on TikTok. And the thing about it, though, is it's still I'm sure they're getting tons of leads that have nothing to do with their licensed jurisdiction or their practice area. Right. And so it's still amazing that this problem hasn't been solved yet. But clearly that's what you're out to solve. And I recall you get so many votes for Tech Show Startup Alley or whatever. I remember seeing you on there and casting one of my votes for you guys because I recognized you. So glad you made it.
Yes. You put us over the edge. Thank you.
Yeah.
No. So first of all, I would love to meet those TikTok attorneys because that is our sweet spot. Is they're getting inquiries that they're not handling, right? It's you want this one thing. Generally, you want in one or multiple states, you want a certain practice area, but the better you are at marketing, the more you're actually going to get other stuff just because you're good and people trust you and not many people trust attorneys. So there's kind of this well effect. You know, it's like you dig down into sand, water just seeps in because it's just trying to get out. And so I think for people like Devin or Tommy, Attorney Tom, and you've got folks like Hugo Lord, Bruce Rivers, Law by Mike, like those, that's such an amazing move because people are building trust as an attorney with the general population. And that's, to me, that's just an unmitigated good because that person who watches those lawyers is more likely to call a lawyer, period. But also it's a really smart move because lawyers, you know, it's like, there's a reason that it's always ladies' night at the bar, right? And like the lawyers who know to market are the ones who are always going to get the free pass because that's 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000.
So you mentioned your target market, but I even want to bring it back to that. So, you know, like any good company, let alone startup or law firm, needs like their customer client avatar, right? Their ideal client or two. So, you know, your plaintiff's personal injury and employment attorneys, right, are yours. But I don't really do that stuff. And I'm on the platform because it is still built for the flexibility to do like other cases. So I can appreciate from a marketing standpoint that you want to promote that's what you do because it's your zone of genius, your sweet spot right now. So then why the decision to at least design a flexible platform for other practice areas too?
Yeah. So for us, it was about, and this is one of our pivots, was like from early days, it was going to be every practice area, anyone can use this. It's anyone can invite anyone to it. And one of the big pivots that we made was actually realizing that we have to put way more limitations on it because there's, especially early days when you're a startup, there's a constant battle between quality and breadth. And it's really easy to say, oh, well, I have this grand vision. Let's help more Americans get more legal services. You know, let's connect all of these lawyers doing all of these things with each other. And you very quickly realize that it actually takes a lot of time, energy, and thought just to support one practice area, to support one location. And so two of the things that we limited were, one, we actually made it harder for lawyers to join the platform so that we could put more thought and effort into training them, onboarding them, making sure that they understood the principles behind the platform, the transparency, the communication. That was one. And then the other one is we've really narrowed down and we made this very intentional decision. It was pretty recently to say there are practice areas that we support and that we are actively recruiting, curating, managing the lawyers that are practicing in those. And we don't not, we, I mean, we curate everyone who comes on the platform, but there's practice areas that are a little bit more of the Wild West where it's like, yes, any, you know, you can join the platform. You can try to get those cases. We'll send those cases when they come in, but we're not going to guarantee the same level of support, coverage, quality for the, you know, for those, because just to do six really, really well is a lot of time, effort, energy. And you asked early on about Gen AI, like we are really wanting to do a deep dive in filtering and enriching the leads that are moving through in our six core case types so that the quality of the cases is really good, so that you're getting engaged clients through the platform, so that we're filtering out the things that are facially not going to be claims that convert into cases. And that's where we're starting to look at the application of AI is not to say, and there's a big difference here, right? One way you could approach it is to say, we're going to look at any lead that goes through the platform and try to determine, is that a lead that is going to get signed by a lawyer? That's really, really impossible. Like let's take a MedMal case, for example. It might actually take 6 months of that person treating just to determine if there's a case, right? Like that's very difficult. But on the flip side, it's a lot easier to say, how can we look at this and try to disqualify this as quickly as possible so that the MedMal attorney is only getting leads that he or she wants to spend a lot of time reviewing and spending time with and is like, oh, every time somebody comes to the platform, I'm definitely going to want to spend time working this up and trying to figure out if it is a valid claim. So I think there's a lot to be done there with generative AI. I think one of the things that is exciting to me, because we're not client facing, is that the stakes are a lot lower. And when we're looking at filtering and enriching, we're not sending ChatGPT out to go talk to potential clients and go off the rails. And I'm sure you read the headline about the car dealership where it was starting to sell Chevy, you know, Silverados for $3, you know, within 15 minutes of being launched on the internet. It's like, this is how this stuff goes. It's a lot easier to say, hey, let's go ahead and start like applying some grading to this, add some feedback loops, a lot of controls on it, so that as these things move through, there's kind of a better assessment approach to it. And we can start to train these models in a very contained environment long before they get anywhere close to talking to somebody.
Yeah. And for my five listeners who were listening closely from the beginning, I want to do a little bit of cleanup. Gabriel and I had a pre-click record chat where AI was mentioned, and so we haven't actually talked about it yet. It's a formal interview. But yes, I'm so glad you brought that up. Another key word that you used was pivot, and something that I try to, from time to time, remind the listeners of, especially if you haven't actually launched that subscription model yet, or they're not quite sure that they're going down the right road, is being able to pivot and do so tactfully is an important just business owner lesson to learn. And so you mentioned you started wide, you narrowed your focus, and that was one pivot. Have there been any other worthwhile pivots that we can learn from and extrapolate into our own practices?
Well, so I think the general principle that I've learned over the past year of building this company is that on the micro level, we're pivoting constantly. Like we took the application and it was one application, we split it in two, one for referring firms, one for acquiring firms. And that took us a few months. And then we just ripped the code base apart. We're like, hey, we just have to do this. So we made that pivot. We made it harder for law firms to actually join and onboard because we wanted them more engaged and more educated as they were coming on. And by increasing the barrier to entry, we're getting much better results with the members of the platform, right? So it was, hey, there's going to be zero barriers to entry. Actually, raising the bar increases the quality of the platform. But I think the fascinating takeaway for me is that the big vision, the broad vision, like you have to be completely committed to that. The way that you're fully committed to subscription law as a service, as a model for lawyers, that's amazing. Like I'm totally committed to this idea that like we can make a place where lawyers love to do referrals, where more clients get help. But then all the micro stuff, I'm fully prepared to be completely wrong and flip-flop on and reverse on that as much as needed to get to the big vision, right? So it's like, it's really important to distinguish between the macro, the vision level is something that I'm not pivoting on at all, because I think that like the mission and the vision and the values matter. And that's on a personal level. But at the same time, I'm really willing to say about any individual tactic or strategy, we're wrong. We have to change this tomorrow. We're done, right? Like you just have to like move on. You have to be fully willing to do that. So I think that was one of the big learnings is, you know, I think sometimes companies get it confused and like, well, I'm just going to continually like shift the vision or where we're headed. Like that's incredibly confusing. And especially in the recent, like, you know, you've seen so many tech layoffs and I've got friends who've been through those. And I think one of the hardest things for them is to see toward the end, right before a lot of these layoffs happen, is how these companies actually have zero commitment to the vision of the company that they claimed was a big deal. And so like, it's really painful and confusing to the whole company when they're just flailing around from a vision and mission and values perspective. But when you have that locked in and then you pivot on like a micro level, I think that actually makes a lot more sense and is a lot healthier.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so much we could talk about, but one of the things that we like to discuss on the show are business models, obviously, the subscription model being the main one. But while I'd love to get your perspective on that, working with attorneys, first of all, what is Lexamica's business model and how do you guys make money?
Subscriptions, Matthew.
And why is that?
Listen, we went back and forth on pricing so many times. I don't think there was a more difficult decision to make than to finally land on where we are with the pricing. Because you could do, just to, you know, to put the range out there, like very similar to law firms, you could do some kind of a usage-based model, which is kind of like hourly. You could do a contingency model. We take a percentage of the fees on the cases. You can do a subscription fee. Ultimately, we landed on subscription, and then we tiered it out by features that are available. And the reason that I like that, one, it's just incredibly transparent pricing model. You know exactly what you're paying for the whole time that you're paying it. That's a huge, you know, there's a lot to be said for simplicity when someone's evaluating something. The other reason that we went with it is because it's a capped pricing structure, and the law firms that we work with are very savvy from a business perspective, and they don't want to get into bed with a service provider that's trying to take 5, 10, 20% of the fees on their cases, because they know that's a massive, like these cases can be extremely valuable and they don't want to do that just because it's free at the beginning. They're not interested in paying that at the end. And so they want to know, like, what is this? How do I fit this into my marketing budget? because it's basically just it's marketing spend. And right. So it really makes sense from there. And then feature tiering it rather than usage tiering it or seat tiering made sense because there's a real correlation between the value that they're getting and also the number of features they need. So like the top end is like full-fledged, like we'll do some marketing services with them. We're building out automations in the background, you know, fully we can bring in custom case types and campaigns all the way down to at the entry level. It's a Zapier integration. It's one call. We get everything pushing in our system. You have access to everything kind of off the shelf. It's easy for us. It's easy for you. And you can still make, you know, you're creating value right off the bat. So I think, you know, we went round and round and round and round, eventually landed straight on top of subscriptions. And I'm really happy with it.
When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form and scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show.
Yeah. I mean, if you could do it, and I think any business can, you know, subscriptions with like feature like tiered structure makes a heck of a lot of sense. I've been pushing for what feels like years for the American Bar Association to do some kind of pricing around that. Because right now, you know, they're a subscription, an annual subscription business, but they charge you based on how long you've been licensed. Because that makes sense, right? No, it doesn't make any sense, right? And so it's like, well, how about how much of the features of the ABA benefits do I want? Do I want, you know, to join one section, five sections? Do I, you know, based upon their publications or the resources associated with those practice areas, right? Because maybe I'm a litigator, but I'm a litigator in IP. So I want to join, you know, litigation and tips and IP, but those are the only three sections I need. Why should I pay more money if I only need access to three kind of a thing? So I've been trying to move them to a feature set and a feature subscription tier pricing. And it's, you know, nobody's listening to me, but that's my law firm essentially does a version of that, a little bit of metered because law, you know, you know, like we're so regulated. I have to be considerate of certain things. Like I wish I could do like a pay annually and get like a 10% discount, which by the way, makes me wonder, you know, are you guys doing month to month? Are you doing 1 year contracts? Are you doing the flexibility of you could save a little bit if you pay a year in advance to help with cash flow and all that?
Yeah. Right now there's annual on the top two and it's no commitment on the low end, right? Cause it's like, hey, dip your feet in the water. You're probably a smaller firm. You're not ready right to make that kind of a commitment. So yeah, I mean, and I think the beauty, like you said, of feature-based pricing is it's like people pay for just as much value as they need to get out of the service. And I think that's what's beautiful because it's like really self, I'm all about like platforms and how governance, you know, really creates this sense of you don't have to tell people no, because if you have good governance in place, they're going to self-regulate effectively. Right. And even with like a feature-based pricing structure, you get self-regulation because someone who needs the value of the mid-tier is going to self-select into that. But if they don't, then and they're down at the base level, it's you solve this whole problem of people just asking you to do stuff for free because you're like, well, no, I 100% would love to do that for you. Here's the pricing tier where you can ask for that and get that. And they're like, oh, either yes, that's great. That's worth enough money for me to pay, or no. And then they quit asking you to do stuff that you know takes a lot of your time and energy away from servicing the people at the higher tiers. And I think from a subscription model for attorneys too, like, man, that makes so much sense because it's like you can freely offer those more in-depth services, those deeper engagements for people that take more of your time. And then you can charge for that value at the same time. And then for the scalable things that are more off the shelf that are really just like ready to deliver, you can do those at a lower price point. And then you don't get into this weird scenario where you're just like, people don't understand the pricing and it's, you know, hourly and it's confusing. It's, man, it's just so much better that way.
Yeah. And combining it with the whole conversation we've had about pivots is, you know, you look at a software tool like Calendly, which I use, you know, sometimes you're bundling features that are not being used by all the people at that subscription level. And so we saw a very rare occurrence that in the SaaS space of Calendly changing their pricing structure and reducing their pricing from their what used to be their professional plan was $144 annually. And now they changed it. They just rebranded and they changed the benefits to a standard plan and like an advanced plan or something like that. But their standard professional became standard, but they got rid of some of these things like round robin and some things that, because so many solopreneurs like me were using Calendly, but we don't have teams. And so they were bundling more features into this level of subscription. So it was costing them more money to provide these features to more people that weren't even using it. And so they decreased one price, increased the next price for people with teams. And some of that just takes time and collecting data and looking at your clients or customer usage and figuring that out. But that's like, I think right there is like a really important lesson on you know, you know, you're not going to get it right the first time that you pick which features at which price.
Oh, I totally agree. And I mean, I think we're probably 80% of the way there on our pricing model, but like it's been really helpful to do, we're doing what you're talking about with Calendly, which is pulling some features out of the low end that are expensive for us to provide that weren't providing that much value for those people who are just trying to get entry level services. So then it becomes like a mutually beneficial relationship where it's like, we're definitely making you money, but we're not going to do the really hard stuff like onboard your entire referral network at this tier where we can't afford to do that. We put that in a higher up pricing tier, give them really off the shelf services that are 100% going to make them money, which lets you get in the door and everyone feels good rather than us being like, well, is this some weird loss leader for us? And then they don't actually care, but they feel like they're obligated to use that feature just because we were providing it. And so absolutely, man. Like, and I'm sure we'll pivot on a lot of like the individual pieces of that pricing model for a while, but I think we're like generally at a macro level, we're settled into where we are.
Another thing I want to ask about specific to the platform is, okay, so like I'm paying this monthly subscription fee. I've either gotten a case or I've referred a case. So in one way or another, I have to either send the referral fee or receive the referral fee. So is that something that the platform handles now? Are you planning to do that in the future?
Yeah, I mean, we're about to release the payment. I mean, by the time this podcast is out, I'm sure that payments will be released. But yeah, we're integrating that in because our North Star is just completely eliminating the friction from referrals. And especially when you look at like the larger creators, it's like they need to be able to push a lead into the system and then get money back into their bank account. And that's it. So yeah, absolutely. That's very much how the platform works.
And I mean, even then, I mean, I know I realize we're recording like this isn't in the past when this gets pushed out. But I'm curious because I think my listeners are going to be super, you know, curious about it is like the client then, do they make payments to Lexamica or do they make payments to the firm that's handling the matter and the firm has like an account connected with Lexamica that gets drawn on to pay the referral fee? Like how, and you might still be ironing those things out, but like what's your thought process on how that's going, the procedure for how that's going to be handled?
No, our thing is we're business to business, right? So we're not going to touch, like the client's not going to pay us directly. And you may have heard of Overture Law, which is very much like intermediating the whole thing. Like they're actually a law firm that's like signed on that case with you. To me, like that's like way, there's a lot of like issues, legal liability issues, and that's so much overhead. And they, I think, do some of the billing directly to the client. We're just saying law firm A, law firm B, bank accounts, everything's hooked up. You can move the money from your trust account to this operating account over here, right? Just super, super simple, just, you know, really easy. No one has to deal with paper checks anymore, but also we're not trying to get in the middle of it and start to bill people. That's a lot of work and you end up in a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, we've had Overture on the show. we've had Aria Ferusman. Also, they have a subscription law firm, those founders. So it made sense to have them on the show. And you know, it's like one of these things where I can't think of a good analogy live. Like it's not Coke and Pepsi because like it's a sweet beverage for both of those things. But it's like, you know, you're coming at this referral problem and you see that there's a problem there. First of all, it must be great validation for you and for the Overture founders that like, okay, I'm not the only legal tech company trying to solve this problem. So it's a little validation that, yes, there's a problem here. It needs to be solved. And I mean, I don't know, maybe Uber Lyft is like a better example, but like they charge the same. Like the way that they implement that, the outcome is the same. But maybe that's a little bit of a closer analogy. And,
well, I think it's actually different. And the thing that I like is I think that we're like necessarily super direct competitors because our business models are different enough. And or if you're listening to the podcast, I'd love to get on a podcast with you and talk about the differences because they are intermediating more deeply. They're doing some of the billing features. They are taking a percentage of the overall fee as a law firm. We're a tech company that's subscription-based. I think that some of our core principles are different. And it's nice. I think we're approaching the same issue, the same problem space from maybe different ends, at least different sides. And so I think it's fascinating. And I've talked to a lot of people who've looked at Overture, who've looked at us and, you know, have interesting conversations about that. So I'm certainly not trying to demean that in any way. And I think especially for smaller law firms, you want someone who's going to intermediate more. Our target market is very much the people who are like doing referrals, they're doing volume, they have call centers already, or they have massive audiences or significant audiences, and they need a zero touch solution for all of this. And so, yeah, so I just think it's a different approach. And so it's really interesting because macro level, a lot of people have tried to do referrals over the past 10, 15 years. You've got like Lotify Referral Network, which is kind of, it is what it is, right? It's more of like a phone book directory. And then you've got some other services that have come out there. No one has really solved this, right? Like there's no paid service that's like highly successful in the referral business, but it is large. And so I think that like one of us or multiple of us are going to figure this out and it's going to be a win for everyone involved. And I don't think it's a winner take all because I do think that there are certainly different ways that people need to deal with their referrals.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a great explanation because you're right. Like now that I'm remembering that conversation, which was a while ago, I am on the Overture platform and the types of cases I see come through are very different, right? Because their focus is on like business law and estate planning. And they are a law firm, right? And they're taking a percentage, which might end up being more money than like a monthly subscription. And it just depends on the types of cases. And it's one of these things where I could be a member of both platforms. Why not? I'm going to get different cases through these platforms. And you know, maybe I'm happy to pay a monthly subscription to one and give up a percentage on the other. And that's totally fine. I mean, it's, you know, the consumer being the lawyer, consumer choice. And it's, yeah, I mean, it is solving different problems within this referral macro problem. Yeah, it's a really
absolutely,
great way to
absolutely.
Put it.
And because we still have different billing models, like we are not going to touch hourly billing. That's not going to be a part of our platform. I think Overture is well set up to touch that. We are starting with contingency. We're moving into flat rate and I think subscription where like it's flat rate one-time payments because we're more set up for a single transaction and lower friction. But to your point, if you're a litigator, if you're a handling firm, you should sign up for every referral platform you possibly can because you have no downside. I think that it's more difficult potentially have a choice if you are the originating law firm because you can't send the same client out on three platforms and not make everybody upset at you. So there's a little bit more like, you know, confusion potentially if you do that poorly. But on your side, on inbound, you should sign up for everything you possibly can. Referrals are free to look at, right? So that's what's so great about them.
Right. And I will tell you that, you know, I think both platforms in their own way are still, and I get why for the lawyers because they want to maximize ROI, is they're looking for high ticket items, right? So like this is a PI case where, you know, we're talking about, you know, mid six figures minimum kind of a thing, right? And same thing for Overture, you know, they're looking at like, you know, expensive litigation or expensive transaction work.
Yeah.
Because I've tried to refer like small fry cases and like you just get no bites. So have you been thinking about like, how do you, because I know the goal is, and the thing about contingency and personal injury attorneys and employment law plaintiff side attorneys is like, you know, there is a contingency factor and these people can't afford legal services. So you are filling the access to justice gap in that regard. But have you thought about like how you're going to handle these small fry cases where, you know, it's harder for lawyers to like, to decide to go after something where they might only make $1,000, even though it's only going to take them a day to help that client?
Well, I think that what we're doing right now, because we're starting more top market, mid-market, is that we are creating this incredible value proposition for anyone who's coming out of law school or just hanging up their shingle in law practice and wanting to strike out on their own. Because yes, the smaller cases, they're on the platform. They're less likely to get picked up by a larger law firm, but like you said, they still have value. And what easier way to start your law practice than to join Lex Amica and start to take on cases that have been put into our case pool that are just available for any lawyer who wants to sign the client to take on. And you can start a business for free, for zero startup cost. You can have a business, and the cash flow as a litigator and referrals is amazing because you don't pay until everybody, you know, you don't pay on that lead until everyone else is paid. I think it's a genius move for the people who are the solos who are getting on our platform and starting to take those smaller cases, because you don't have to do any work. Like, you just get started.
And here's a prediction for you, because I do a little bit of like consulting on the side for these market research VC firms who go through like these subject matter expert platforms. And one of my predictions as an expert is we will see a mass exodus from big law when lawyers who hate billing their time and hate realize it's not worth the sacrifice anymore, because they discovered it's so easy and so cheap to go solo and start your own practice, that I think we're actually going to see, with that mass exodus, a boom of solo practice attorneys that were former big law, because it is so easy. Like, my first year of having a solo practice only cost me $5,000, right? So like, it's not expensive to do it. And if I could get a bunch of, and the hardest thing, like the hardest thing, was getting clients. It still is, right? And so like, being able to go to a platform, you know, like you said, and there's all this low hanging fruit on there, if you're willing to do these lower cost cases, that's a huge win. It's a win for the law firm. It's a win for those clients who wouldn't have gotten legal services. And then, of course, your platform, you know, is getting that monthly fee from the attorneys posting it, right? So there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm just excited about it. Like, I think that it's a more sophisticated way for lawyers to build businesses, to do what they're good at, for clients to get that help and to move the needle on the 3/4 of Americans that aren't getting legal services when they have an issue. So I mean, just the wave of legal tech that's hitting right now, this, I would call it the secondary wave, even though the primary, which I would say is more like the e-discovery and the case management systems, is starting to mature, but it's still not fully saturated the market. The secondary wave is also like very interesting to me. I love it. I love the community. I love the plaintiff's law community contingency. It's a great place to be. Like, the amount of opportunity is great. I would love to see more people enter and start to solve these problems.
So with that, I guess I'll let you turn the tables. You said in our pre-call chat that maybe you had some questions for me. So I'll let you, you know, put on host hat here for the last 5 to 10 minutes or so, and go ahead, ask away, ask anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I think that law needs transparent, clear pricing structures. Subscription is just a great, people, we love subscription models. What innovations have you made in the past 6 months since we last spoke? What's working? What are your clients responding to and saying, wow, like this is great. This is so much better than what I found in other places.
So one I've changed, I think the largest change I made was I changed up my fractional GC subscriptions to like businesses that actually require like a fractional general counsel. I used to do 1500 for like 10 projects, 5000 for 15 projects, and 10,000 for 20 projects. And in the year and a half that I had been operating at the time, nobody ever signed up for the highest level subscription package. And I had one client at the 1500 a month that just, it was like, ended up being way more work. So I changed up my pricing. And also it's confusing because I have three buckets, right? I do still have three buckets, but it was in bucket one was individuals, $20 a month or $100 a month. Then in bucket two was freelancers, solopreneurs, you know, like me. Right. And it was $300 a month for the entry for the freelance plan. And then freelancer plus was $1,000 a month for the freelancer that's really, you know, booming, has a lot of business. Right. And so I decided to adapt that to my business level. So now it's business level and business level plus, like the freelancer stuff. And that's just $2,500 a month and $5,000 a month, because it just the feature thing, right? Like, the features more adequately fit the pricing. So I adapted my third bucket pricing and feature set, where I felt like I was getting paid the right amount of money to do the type of work that's expected at that level. And I think there's more clients in that space. For a business owner that's bringing in $500,000 or more in gross revenue, for $30,000 a year to not have to worry about legal stuff again, because their legal needs are, it's there, but it's not every day there. but it's a few times a month. There's some legal things that come up. That's perfect. That's perfect for them. I could probably charge more, but I'm trying to serve business owners, to answer the second part of your question, and people who have, like, they've never hired attorneys before, or if they did, it was because they had no other option, right? So, like, this is the latent legal market. This is the 75 to 80% of people with legal needs that can't afford an unknown billable hour that they can't budget for. And so, and it's not like these people don't have some money to pay, or these business owners don't have some money to pay, but they just not, they need pricing certainty. And so the people who do hire me, I think they really appreciate that, but they also don't have anything to compare it to. And so, you know, like, there's that part of it. And I wish they did, because it would be a heck of a lot easier. And I found that my most grateful clients are institutional clients, even though that's not who I'm trying to serve. But they paid expensive billable hours in the past, and they love how they could just have a relationship with me. And they try to maximize their subscription benefits. They get the charge at the start of their 30-day cycle. You know, I say month-to-month pricing, but it's a 30-day cycles in the automations. So at the start of their 30-day cycle, they get that charge that comes through. This is the benefit of month-to-month billing, by the way. I don't even know if I, even if I ethically could charge an annual fee, I don't know that I would for the membership, because once they see that charge, they're like, okay, I want to call my lawyer right away so I can, like, maximize these subscription benefits, because I've already paid it. It's a paid fee. It's, you know, it's at least in Illinois, that goes right into my operating account. And so, and as long as they get access to those subscription benefits right away, it's, you know, it's a little bit of a gray area, but I think it's pretty much an earned fee at that point. You know, it remains to be seen if that's a fully earned fee. If they asked for the money back and I, like, the next day and I didn't do anything for them that month, I'd probably refund the money, because even though my engagement agreement says I don't have to refund it at all, or I don't have to refund the full amount, you know, at that point, you know, it's probably something that I'd consider refunding, because I haven't, have I actually earned it? Maybe, you know, I'll do a pro rata type thing. But they maximize, they want to maximize their subscription benefits of getting those projects, or seeing what flat fee below market pricing that I offer to the just the lower level subscribers. And so, like, that month to month fee where they, like, get the fee and then they want to maximize the benefits. Like, think about it, like, all right, oh shoot, I forgot to cancel Disney Plus. Oh well, there was that one new Marvel show I haven't watched yet, so I might as well go binge that and then I'll cancel, right? That kind of a thing. It's a real thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. And I love it. And look, I know you're a solopreneur, but, like, I think the whole thing has legs. And have you considered either kind of franchising or expanding this out nationally from what you're doing?
I mean, I'm definitely getting requests from other lawyers that, like, want to start doing it or learn how to do it. I did have one law firm that was like, you know, should we like combine and partner and stuff, but we're just pursuing totally different types of clients and in practice areas that it didn't really make sense, right? But I am through the podcast, although it's rolling out very slowly. I am teaching lawyers through my subscription seminar at subscriptionseminar.com. It's just a wait list because I'm a practicing attorney first, so I'm only able to have like two or three lawyers at a time that I'm training to go through this thing. And so while they're not formally like a franchise, like they don't have the brand subscription attorney as part of what they're doing, it is, you know, I've taught them and I've worked with them on how to best use the model for what their goals are as a firm owner. And, you know, we're becoming sort of an unofficial network of like subscription attorneys across the country. And, you know, yeah, I've definitely considered it like the franchise thing, because at least from a value-based perspective, you know, if I could subscribe to just Subscription Attorney LLC, but I could get access to any kind of practice area as a result of that subscription, I think there's incredible value there. But that's going to be a long time in the future. Like, realistically, it's just going to be like, you know, platforms like yours that are going to help us refer cases and streamline that process without having to worry about, you know, because we're practicing attorneys, right? The more we could outsource,
right,
especially the solos, the more we could outsource and automate, the better, kind of a thing. So it's like, yes, we have these maybe relationships as it goes forward. I've referred several clients to some attorneys that do subscription startup law, because I just don't do that part of representing businesses. I do the everyday vanilla stuff that the founders just don't want to do, which is not something they necessarily want to outsource in the beginning. They need that startup lawyer to help them with their cap table and all that stuff, right? I don't do that. And so I've been referring that to some subscription attorneys who I know. But eventually, like, I get people from all over come in and it's like, I can't help you with that just because of a license thing. And there's no attorney in Pennsylvania yet who does, I mean, that's not true anymore, but who does subscription.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, well, I just think it has, yeah, long-term, it's brilliant. It's simple. It's so clean and clear. And man, yeah, I really appreciate you having me on the podcast today.
Yeah, the last question I got to ask you, Gabriel, is a question I ask all my guests, which is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
Definitely not a sandwich because I don't, well, man, that is such a weird question. You got to warn people. I'm going to go with no. It's a stick of meat on a roll. And to me, that's not a sandwich.
Okay.
I love a good hot dog, but I don't think I can put it in the sandwich camp.
All right. So if people want to find Lexamica, if they want to contact you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Check out our website, lexamica.com, LEXAMICA. Would love to have you. And I think, you know, if you're a subscription attorney, flat rate, if you're contingency, come on, take a look at it. Would love to talk to you. And just, you know, I nerd out about the stuff that Matthew and I nerded out about today. This stuff it's fascinating. And it's really the future of how we can bring more transparency to law.
Yeah. Gabriel, thanks so much for coming on Law Subscribed.
Matthew, thank you for having me.
And that's our show. Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for being sponsors. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with somebody you think would find value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.